Accession number 18573, Reel 1.
Fred Van Ad, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in a Bavarian little village called Reit im Winkel, which is on the border of Germany, Austria and Switzerland, right in the corner. That's why it's called Reit im Winkel, which means, translated, right in the corner.
And it's near to which town?
Well, the nearest town would be Traunkirchen, I suppose. Yes, Traunkirchen.
And which year were you born in?
In 1924.
What did your father do for a living?
Well, originally, my father was in the legal profession. But he got out of that and then went into hotel keeping.
Was your father in the First World War?
Indeed he was, yes. In France.
What was he in France? What kind of regiment?
That I don't know, I'm sorry. I have no idea.
But he saw active service?
He was called up, he saw active service, he was opposing the American army.
Did you go to school in Bavaria?
I did. I went to school in Bavaria and in Czechoslovakia. Because my parents moved from Germany at a very early age, I was only a baby, to a town called Brno, in Czechoslovakia. That's where they had the business.
Running a hotel?
Running a hotel, yes.
So, you grew up in Brno?
I grew up virtually all my life, in Brno, yes. It was sort of a German enclave of about 6,000 people there.
Did you learn Slovak?
I spoke Czech fluent. Absolutely fluent.
Is Brno in Slovakia or...
No.
Moravia?
It's in Moravia, yes.
But your mother tongue was German?
Oh, yes.
What were relations between the Germans in Brno and the local Czechs?
Splendid. Until Mr. Hitler decided to send in what I was called his henchmen, stirring up trouble. Because until then, until 1938, relations between Germans and Czechs were absolutely on a par. German people had jobs in government, even in Czechoslovakia. There was no problem whatsoever.
Who are these henchmen you're talking about?
Well, I'm talking about political people. Going in and telling people they need to be liberated. That's how it all started. They kept brainwashing, in other words, brainwashing people, telling them they are being used, they are being indoctrinated, and all sorts of things. That's how it all started, to cause dissent amongst the Germans. Then eventually, they formed a party, which they called the Henlein Party, which was a sort of national socialist party. And they stirred it up, they were the brown shirts, and they really stirred up trouble. And when it came to the autumn 38, it all started going wrong. They were attacking Czech people. They retaliated. And that was, as far as I can see, that was the excuse Hitler used to go in to liberate the Germans.
Had you had Czech friends?
Oh, indeed, yes. Lots of them.
Did you go to a school which was mixed German and Czech?
No. No, there was always German school. From right when I was small, 5 years old, to the age of 10, it was a German school, mixed, boys and girls. Then I went to a different school, which was, again, boys' school only, but German. When I went to what they call the gymnasium, which is what would be what Linda went to. What was that called?
Grammar school.
Grammar school, yeah. Grammar school, that was German. Then I went back to Germany and went to Stuttgart University, which was the dental school.
What was the standard of living like in Brünn in the 20s and 30s as you experienced it?
I can well remember it. In the 20s, terrible. It was very bad, recessions, after the war. I well remember bringing home, at one point, 23 boys for my mother to feed. Because we never went short of food, running a hotel, there was always food. And they used to bring those boys home so she could feed them.
What was your mother's reaction to that?
She wasn't too keen at first. It started off with one particular friend. It was an Italian. And they were really virtually destitute. They used to bring him. His name was Diego Messaglio. I always remember his name. And he used to come home and mother fed him. Well, the next day it was 2, and that's how it went. In the end, it was 23.
Where did you find these boys?
At school. They were all school friends. Well, I went to school with them. Some of them were friends, anyway.
And did things improve as time went on?
Oh, yes. Things improved as far as I could see. I was only very young, so my judgment possibly wasn't quite up to the mark. But things improved, funnily enough, when things improved in Germany. And that was when Hitler came to power. For one reason or other, I mean, people condemn him for this, that and the other, I know. But things improved. And they improved in Czechoslovakia as well.
So how did your father's business running the hotel get on under these conditions?
As far as I can recall, it was always chock-a-block, full of people.
Why should that be the case if there were difficult economic conditions?
Well, you will know this. My mother had a good reputation as a cook. They came from 50 miles around. And there was, especially weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, we had, at times, 300 people there. During the week, obviously, it was more the locals, but weekends, they came from all over the place.
What was the hotel called?
For a famous, the Grand.
Was it big?
72 rooms.
How could your father afford to buy it in the
first place? Opposite. How could he afford it? He couldn't, really. I mean, my granddad, who was a farmer in Germany, he lent him some money. My mother's people were farmers. They lent her some money. So they bought it, obviously mortgaged up to the hilt. But it was a good going concern, and they made a very good living.
Was your father or mother interested in the political situation? Were they political animals, as it were?
Well, my father was a political animal to the extent that he was at one point secretary of the local Socialist Party. And when Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia, we lost Dad for nearly 2 years to Dachau. So, I wasn't a great friend of Hitler's myself after that. But there you go.
Did he speak to you about what had happened to him in Dachau?
No. No.
What condition was he in by the time he came out?
Very, very thin. Skeleton. He wasn't ill, but he was just very, very thin.
Was it unusual for a hotel owner to support the socialists?
I can't really say. I never gave it much thought. Because the people involved, my father's friends and acquaintances when they had meetings, which they had in the place. They were business people as well, some of them. So, thinking about it today, I might think it's a bit unusual, yes.
So your father must have been in Dachau 38 to 40, was he?
Yeah. Just beginning of 40, yeah.
Did your mother share his political opinions?
My mother wasn't a political animal. She voiced her opinion, yes. But she wasn't interested in politics. She always hated the right wing. Always did. That doesn't mean to say she was left wing. She just hated right wingers for what they were. Because they always tried to force their opinions onto people, and she just didn't agree with that. That's why she didn't like Helmut Kohl. She always disliked him intensely.
Were you interested in politics as a young man?
No. Politics didn't really come into my life.
Had you always wanted to be a dentist?
That emerged when I wasn't clever enough to be a doctor. I had it in my mind to become a doctor, or thought about that. But then when it came to exams, I was a lazy devil. So when it came to exams, and that all I could manage was dentistry.
So when were you at the University of Stuttgart?
39, 40. I was 17, so it must have been the end of 40. I was only there for 18 months, because I was called up then.
So about 40 to 42?
Yeah, about 18 months I was there.
Do you remember the declaration of war?
Oh,
the
yeah.
Start of the war?
Oh, yeah.
What do you remember about that?
A four-hour-long speech by Adolf Hitler. And he was whatever else he was a good orator. And he spoke, we watched him, for 4 hours, non-stop, without notes. Repeating himself a lot, obviously. But he got people mesmerized.
You watched him or you heard him?
Watched him.
You were present?
On television.
You had television?
We did. Yeah. One of the first ones.
How did you feel when you heard the news that another war had broken out?
How did I feel? Excited, I think.
Didn't you feel any sense of dismay?
I was too young. Too young. By that time, we have been, to some extent, brainwashed to think that anything German is the only thing right. And therefore, when war was declared, we imagined we could put the world to rights as Germans, which obviously subsequently turned out to be completely wrong, but there you go.
What was your mother's reaction to the outbreak of war?
She was very distressed, I think. She was distressed. Come to that, so was my father, because I remember the First World War.
What was your address when war broke out?
My address?
Yes.
Kirchengasse, number 4. Church Street, number 4.
Whereabouts?
In Brünn.
And when was it that you left Brünn?
When I went to Stuttgart, which was in the end of 40, beginning of 41. Yeah.
What was it like at Stuttgart University in the days of the war?
It was lovely. It didn't affect Stuttgart at all. But at that time, there were no air raids, not down there anyway. So as far as we were concerned, the war didn't exist. Only what we heard on the wireless. People were well off, because there was no unemployment. Everybody was earning money. And by that time, as young people, we definitely thought that Mr. Hitler was a marvelous chap. Because he built estates like this bungalow estates. People were paying what would now amount to about £5 a week rent, and within 10 years they were the owners of it. And he introduced the Volkswagen. And people were buying Volkswagens for next to nothing. Workers. So we naturally thought he was marvelous.
Who owned the bungalow until the resident got possession? A building society or the state or what?
The state. The state ran it. It was administered by what we used to call the Brown Shirts, which was the SA, the political wing of the Reich. They administered it all. They were continually strutting about all over the place anyway, giving you instructions what you were allowed to do, what you were not, and things like that. But that didn't come in until 41, round about there. Because until I went to Stuttgart, we didn't realize there was a war on. It didn't affect us in any way. There were the art people called up, and one or two volunteers, and as far as we were concerned, that was about it.
How had the people in Brünn reacted when Germany took over Czechoslovakia in March 1939?
Well, you must understand, I'm now telling you it from my point of view as a very young lad, a teenager. The way I saw it, I already told you there were a few thousand Germans living in that enclave there. But when Hitler actually visited, which he did, shortly after he occupied it, he came around in his car and stood there, and there were literally thousands and thousands there. I've never seen so many people in my life. They were all cheering. And they were not all Germans. Couldn't have been. Because there weren't that many Germans living there. And as far as I'm concerned, I have been told by Austrians, the same happened in Austria when he went in there. They were literally inundated with flowers by millions of people lining the route. But after the war, it was called an occupation. And yet he was welcomed with open arms at the time.
Why do you think that was?
It could possibly be that the Czechs, perhaps, or some anyway, realized that what Hitler did in Germany, in other words, economically, Germany was going great guns then, by then. And they perhaps realized that he might do the same for them.
So the Germans all tended to live in one part of Brünn?
Well, it was an area of several miles, actually, south from Brünn towards Austria. About 100 kilometers. There were several villages. Do you want the name of those?
If you can remember.
I remember some. Obergerspitz, Untergerspitz, Mödritz. They're about the only ones I remember now. They were all German, German names. They went south to nearly to the Austrian border, a little sort of narrow corridor.
You were telling me earlier on about your time at Stuttgart. Can you tell me more about what life was like there at the university?
Well, I should think more or less the same as it is in any English university. You enjoy yourself. You play hooky as much as you can. Only there was a bit more discipline then. We were scared of playing hooky. I did once or twice. But the dean was very much a disciplinarian. If you were back late, which meant 10 o'clock at night, curfew. If you were back late and you went over the fence to get in and you were caught, you were expelled. On the spot. They didn't mess around. There was discipline. You were not allowed to speak at lectures unless asked to do so. Not like today when they all interrupt each other and laugh and talk and none of that. You had to keep quiet.
And your course was called dentistry, was it?
It was a dental course, yes. There were actually two courses run parallel. One of them, you took a doctorate, which would be the equivalent of a British BDS, British dental surgeon, or you took the other one, which was a dentist. You didn't get a degree as a dentist. You were allowed to practice dentistry, but you did not have a degree, which meant you were only allowed to perform a limited amount of incisions in the mouth. That's what it amounts to.
Which one did you take?
Dentist.
How long was the course supposed to be for?
3 years.
But you didn't do the full three?
No, that's where the story continues later on when I was a prisoner.
We'll come on to that later. Mm. But you weren't living in lodgings in Stuttgart?
No, I was living in the university campus.
Did the war affect the university at all, do you think?
Well, it ultimately affected me, because I was only 18 then. I was deferred from call-up, because people were called up at 18. I was deferred from call-up twice. It was reviewed every 6 months. I was deferred twice, and after the second time, I was called up.
How did you feel about being called up?
Initially, I suppose a bit scared, because basically I'm a coward anyway, a bit scared, but my brother, who was a bit older, he was by then in Berlin on Goering's staff, and he managed to get me into what I wanted to go into, and not what the Army or Air Force wanted me to be. Because when you were called up, they put you where they wanted you to be, and that's it. You had no say in it. But my brother obviously was in a position to pull a string or two, so I was asked where I wanted to go. So I chose the Navy.
You mean your brother was an Air Force officer?
Yes, he was.
A staff officer working for Goering?
Yes. A small staff officer. A very minor staff officer.
Why did you want to go in the Navy rather than the other services?
There again, I was very young. And Bavaria, where I then was, is Stuttgart, being a landlocked country, basically the uniform appealed to me. In Bavaria, we've seen a lot of Army chaps, Air Force chaps, but no Navy chaps. So I thought, Navy, well, that would go down very well with the ladies. So that was it.
So where did you go to once you were called up?
Eckernförde, near the Danish border. I was called up. It was a torpedo testing station, but my call-up had nothing to do with torpedoes at all. It was basically a training camp for basic training in the Navy, which everybody had to go to, which is the same as Army training. In other words, you learn how to square bashing, shoot a gun, and whatever.
How were you treated in the basic training?
Terrible. Terrible. Because every officer and every little sergeant and corporal thought they were little Hitlers. They felt so powerful that all the people they had under their command, they felt they could manipulate them the way they wanted to, and they did. The things they used to do to us wouldn't be allowed today.
Can you give any examples?
An example would be the big arena we had, what we used to call a square bashing arena. It was clay. And when it rained, you can imagine what that was like. It was well, clay anyway, and we had to crawl on our elbows with the, holding the gun, because you were not allowed to mess your gun up, crawling on our elbows, uniform absolutely full of mud and clay. When he finished with that, and he did that, went on for an hour perhaps, running around and this, that and the other. When it was finished, of course, you were in one hell of a mess. So they gave you 5 minutes to clean yourself up and be on parade. So what we did, into the shower room, as we were, in uniform, pulled the shower and scrubbed each other down and then went out on parade. Soaking wet to the skin, obviously. Well, then started very often, if somebody did something wrong at square bashing, and whoever was in charge took umbrage, they used to call what a carnival, which consisted of changing uniform from this wet thing you had into, for instance, sports outfit. So you had to run into your barracks, change into sports outfit, out on parade again. You got 2 minutes flat to do that. And he timed you, 2 minutes, you had to change into your going out uniform. In you went, changed your going out uniform. And that went on perhaps for half an hour. You were absolutely exhausted by then. All your uniforms, we had in fact, all in all, we had 5 different uniforms for different things. Parade uniform, sports uniform, going out, and I can't even recall the other two. But after half an hour of this, you can imagine what your locker looked like. One mess, one heap. He gave you 5 minutes for inspection. And your locker then had to be spick and span. Everything edge to edge, folded. 5 minutes after that lot. Of course, nobody could manage that. So you were in trouble again. That's how it went on.
Why do you think they adopted these tactics?
Basically, I thought anyway afterwards, to grind you down, to become really, I don't know what the expression is in English, to become really subservient. That's the way I saw it anyway. So you blindly followed instructions and orders.
Do you think all this did you any good?
Yes. I think so.
In what sense?
Well, I think I led a more disciplined life. I looked at life more in a way of... I can't really explain it properly. Yeah, I think I was more disciplined, and I don't know, that's why I can't reconcile life today with then, because there's hardly any discipline about now. Anybody does anything they want, and nobody's allowed to do anything about it. And that doesn't appeal to me. That's where my German comes into it again, discipline.
I know in the Royal Navy, in the English Navy, there were certain tests of nerve that they had to do, like climbing up extremely high masts and then having to do a manoeuvre on the top of the mast. Was there anything of that?
Plenty. That comes later. Plenty.
So that was at Egenförde. How long did that last?
That was Egenförde. That was exactly 5 weeks. And from Egenförde, we were sent to the island of Sylt. I don't know if you heard of it, but...
Yes.
Yeah. A place called Vesterland, which is a small market town on Sylt. And there was a barracks there. That's where I was sent to become a wireless operator. The way they decided I was going to become a wireless operator, they required, obviously they had orders, they required so many wireless operators for different departments in the Navy. So we had to queue up at least 50 of them.